Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to The Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Richard Cheatham. Good afternoon. I was going to say good morning, but good afternoon, Richard. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Good afternoon to you too. Yeah,
thank you very much.
Nice to catch up after our meeting up in May.
Definitely. I'm really, excited to kind of delve into some of your experiences and your insights. Just before we get into that, maybe, Rich, just a brief insight around who you are, what you do, for those that haven't come across you before.
Yeah, so I'm my role in the my day-to-day role, if you like, as I'm a senior fellow in sports coaching at Winchester University, which I've been in for sort of a number of years. But alongside that, I do a lot of coach development work in different governing bodies and mentoring for coaches in different sports, from cycling to rugby. Those are my prime sports, if you like, but I'm working across a number of different sports in those kind of areas of supporting coaches in their work, say, in different disciplines.
Amazing. I don't know where to start, but I've got an idea of where I'm going to go with it. You mentioned, obviously, working as a coach developer across different sports. Just take me back to maybe the start of that journey. How did coach development become a thing for you? And obviously recognizing that, for as long as there's been coaches, there must have been some element of coach development, but we've certainly seen a rise and I guess a real, speed to kind of put the forefront of everything right now in terms of coach development, how important it has become and it is maybe going to become even more in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really nice way to start from my perspective of, when I stopped playing rugby, I went to coach my local team. And then after a while, because I was involved with England Rugby and the RFU, I then became a coach developer. So working to support coaches and teach coaches on their courses. And I suppose those skills that you learn, because my sports are quite diverse, say from cycling, rugby, basketball, mountain biking, all these different things. And then as you, I suppose, get older and then you develop coaches on the degree programme, I do remember my friend Phil Dowson, who's at Northampton Saints, and he said to me once, he said, well, because I'd known him when he was a player, and he said to me, well, who coaches you? I thought that was a really good question. Like, who do I go to when I want to, run an idea past or kind of reflect or have some sense of awareness of who do I reach out to? Players reach to coaches, who do coaches go to? And that made me realise the importance of having the need to support coaches because, many of them work in isolation. They are the sole coach, the guy who runs the team. Probably sounds familiar to some of your listeners that they wash the kit, do the fixtures, pick the team, coach the team. And they don't often get that chance to have a sounding board or even maybe time to learn. And sometimes that learning is small refinements in their approach rather than something big and significant. And what I've found is that what I enjoy is being able to go to a coach and just help them identify certain things. And those aren't always problems. So sometimes it's celebrations. You know, I remember going to Birmingham City evening one night, and you know, I'm not a football coach, but I was asked just to watch one of the sessions, and my feedback to the coach, who's keen to sort of say, you know, what do you think I can develop? And I said, well, I couldn't tell, and I've said this before, and you know, I couldn't tell if it was minute one or minute 90. The energy with those kids was almost like just so consistent. They were as energetic at the end after running around for 90 minutes as they were at the beginning. You know, that's my... How brilliant is that? There's no fade-off, no disengagement, no fatigue. They're just so hungry. So coach development is to celebrate the good that we don't see in ourselves when we reflect, sometimes quite harshly. Someone gives a bit better perspective. And also see some of the little things that we don't notice about ourselves to get better.
I think that's fascinating because, you know, a lot of what you said does resonate with me, and I do think about a lot of the coaches that I currently support and I've worked with in the past. And straight away, when you think about coaching, and more specifically with this coach development, there is a almost a knee-jerk reaction to go straight towards the quote-unquote negatives, about where we can maybe improve or correct rather than recognizing what's gone well. And I think, you know, I think that there's so much power in that. I think within that, it's also recognizing, as you said, like a lot of coaches, and this is the conversation I've been having with a lot of people recently, is that who do you go to get your support? You know, because I think that piece is more important than I guess anything else. And you know, as you well know, that it's probably not through the courses or the educational aspects of what you're doing that you're really going to take away some real growth and learning. Yes, there will be bits that you can kind of take away and conceptualize, but ultimately it is those relationships that you're going to start building, and those people that may be willing to be a critical friend, if you like, or just offering external observations and almost shining a light on the blind spot, if you like.
Yeah, and I think the very last thing you mentioned about the blind spot, that is almost the theme. The things that we are so... We go and we work every week with our team, and we just miss things. Now, those aren't bad things, but it's just we simply can't consume all of what's happening. And it takes somebody from outside just to notice that bit that goes, did you realise that? And I hadn't realised that. And sometimes that can be, you know, just the joyful moment when you've said something to somebody who really kind of gets that lift from, that was great that you did this, I loved what you did. And they may think that you're not noticing them. And the outside observer says you've got a great ability to interact with everybody in that time. So I think we are naturally, we will have our blind spots, absolutely. And as long as I know I've got blind spots and are open to that feedback to ultimately make us better and make their experiences better, then that's growth, isn't it? Not somebody who's fixed
most definitely. I think one of the things with that is, and it's interesting, I had a conversation with a coach recently, and which is discussing this exact piece around blind spots. And you know, yes, there's recognition of things that need to be developed, and I think it's part of that process is also accepting there's always going to be some. It's never going to be perfect. There literally always will be something else, and it's a great phrase that I like to use. And it's like the reason why they are blind spots, because if you're in the frame, you can't see the picture.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And I mean, we're immersed in, aren't we? We can't zoom out from ourselves and watch ourselves.
100%. And I think sometimes it's not just about necessarily getting the external observations, but I think one of the challenges that I see coaches have, and it'll be interesting to get your thoughts on this, especially in football where I do a lot of my coach development work, the coaches' reliance is on getting observations of other coaches, potentially more experienced coaches, whatever that might mean, or more qualified coaches. But actually sometimes it's just helping the coach to understand, actually you can probably learn something from someone who's newer to the space than you as well.
Yeah. And I think what that comes with, that critical friend, is two things critical: look at the good and the bad, and the friend means you're receptive to somebody, because the friendship means ultimately they're there to support you. So who you choose as your critical friend, and, you know, I mentor people in sports that I don't coach, you know, I don't have to know about the sport. I have to, but I know about learning. I know about environment. I know about interactions, and the small things and the big things. And you say that framing, you know, you're in the picture, so you can't see it, is so true. When do we get a chance to watch ourselves in the moment?
Mm. You know? No, it's spot on. I always think back, and I'm sometimes, even when I'm delivering on whether it be a course or workshop or whatever, I actually sometimes record myself delivering that. And there's two elements to it. One, because I want to know, right, what am I missing? What, you know, is there any subtle behaviors or tendencies that I'm enacting which I'm not aware of? Also trying to recognize and link that to, well, what impact might have that had on the group at any given point? But then also to show the coaches, actually, no, I'm not perfect either. I might be the one delivering this content. I might be the one mentoring you or guiding you through this process. But ultimately, I've still got my own blind spots, and I'm still trying to develop. And I think that's the key piece to kind of just bring it back to. So I guess in terms of that mentoring piece, you know, if there's coaches listening to this thinking, you know what, I'd love to have a mentor, a critical friend, where would you recommend they start? What kind of questions, or how would they seek clarity on that? Because I think that is often a challenge, because as coaches, not saying it's right or wrong, but it can be a very ego-driven space. So it's almost, do I really want to be vulnerable and let someone else in on it?
Yeah, I remember somebody mentioned about that word ego, you know, the coaching ego, you know, of course we want to be good. We want to lift ourselves by being good at what we do. That's the good thing. And I think, who do we choose? Well, sometimes it's not formal. It's not like going through a governing body. It's actually, who do you trust will give you an authentic response to what you've done? And that, you know, I rely a lot here when I coach, because although I've got colleagues I work with when I'm teaching, they can't observe me. They sometimes do or not now and again. I rely upon the critical friend being the audience, you know, because they've experienced me. So don't say, did you enjoy it? Because that's such a loaded question. But there, I suppose it's, if you really know about an environment, whether it's working or not, just stand back and watch. And the cues they give you, like that session at Birmingham, he didn't need to ask me. They ran, they laughed, they fell over, got back up, they interacted. There is your kind of like mentoring in that way, because the audience are giving you that feedback. The critical friend is just to say, who has kind of walked my path? Who was me once? Who knows those? You know, I remember my very first coaching session, and it was the players who told me, and then the coach told me, and then I realized that he was my sounding board, you know, and I trusted him. And then over time, your dependency, if you like, on that critical friend, it becomes momentary. Can you come in and watch? Just watch now, or can I pick the phone up? And I tried this. What do you think? So, the strong mentoring is not always built upon a formal process of a document where you write down session plans and you review it. It's the ability to pick a phone up, to send somebody a video, to invite them down to watch you, because they'll add fresh eyes to it. And if they are that friend, they'll know you, your journey, and they'll also know that you will be receptive to their comments.
It's a great point. I guess I've got a bit of a loaded question that's just prompted in my mind as you're speaking. So what works in coach development then?
That is a great question, and there is a lot more emphasis on coach development now in all governing bodies and general themes. You know, we were a coach development session together, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking about it from a standpoint. If you mentioned, obviously, you know, you've been involved in different sports, and I've not really been involved in coach development across different sports myself, but you do always hear about different sports doing different things, and some of them doing it really well and not. I'm just thinking, is there can we really get to a point where we can say, well, this works, or is it so contextual that actually there's too many variables in between it?
One of the things that I found in strength in my coach development work, and strength, I don't mean pat myself on the back, but what I mean is the response from those I coach, is when I work with coaches, sometimes it's been a long time since they were players and athletes. So what I do is I get them to experience being a participant again. So I used a lot of play. When I was at St. George's Park, you know, I thought I was going to get a pitch. I got a balcony by a classroom. So it's like, right, okay, I've got to really adapt, which is fine. And we did a lot. We did sort of three games, playful games. Now, they experienced something. And if you experience something that you really enjoy or really reflect, oh, that's a really good idea, I didn't realise, then you become an advocate of it. And then, of course, then what you do is you then shape how you coach. I really enjoyed it. Imagine what those I coach, I reckon they'll really enjoy it as well. It'd be great. So some of my development work, a lot of it is around experiential learning. To put the coach back in the position of being a participant, and to get them to remember what it's like, that struggle of learning, that joyfulness of playing, to experience a game that think, oh, that my team would really enjoy that warm up, that skill. We did some work yesterday on movement, and one of my areas that I focus a lot on in my coaching when I was coaching rugby, and even now still this team, is in development of players, I look at movement first. Okay, because, you know, the foundation of a good athlete is movement. And you know from football, the great players who have real athleticism, they learn in multiple ways through different disciplines those functional movement skills, which we should have in our early years. So my point is that when I've done some sessions, I've done a lot of it around things that they hadn't thought, their blind spot, if you like. They're very technical, very knowledgeable about that. But the expectation of somebody to do a complex movement in your skill is only as good as the movement skill vocabulary they've got to enable them to do it. So let's blend in movement as part of our teaching.
So it's a really good point. I guess the question has popped up in my head, didn't it? Where do you stand on coaches and them having experience of the sport to be effective, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the questioning and the validity that some coaches, certainly coaches you and I know and at a grassroots level, may feel, I haven't played the game. I haven't played the game at that level. Therefore, who am I to tell you? And there's lots of different things. You know, a good doctor doesn't have to have had all the illnesses that he's dealing with when patients come see him. I mean, maybe they have, but it's an understanding of learning, understanding of environment, and understanding of coaching and teaching. And, you know, classically, the two most successful coaches are Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho, whose football palmarès, as we call it in cycling, was not that of a European Cup winner, but they understood about skill development.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because like you said, you know, there is that school of thought for some people that, you know, if you haven't been able to do it, I'm not necessarily prescribing to the idea that you have to have done it to necessarily a higher level, but I think you do need to have some capacity to perform the things that you want your players to perform, if that makes sense. And obviously age and stage might come into that. You know, the older you get, the harder it might be to demonstrate some of the things. But I think there's different ways around it. Like, I'm probably doing myself a disservice by saying this, but I'm a bit of a lazy coach sometimes. I don't do demos in full speed. I do everything half speed, not because I can't do it, but because I feel like, one, I don't want to exert myself too much, but two, if I need to, I can. But more importantly, I think that visual element is so important for the coaches and the players that I work with that actually have to see it, whether it's half speed, full speed, or double speed. And I think it's in those moments where you're able to then maybe get their attention or focus to on what's happening, what, you know, what needs to happen. But I guess the question I'm now thinking about, as off the back of what you've said, is it a challenge then if the coaches can't do it?
I think it's a perceived challenge they can't do it. I mean, you know, I'm 60 now. I've just done a session with my students this morning. They were one play short, so I joined in. And my decision-making was good, and my ability to match that with my body movement was not so good because I'm a lot older than them. So I think the modelling is important, but we don't have to model in real time. And we can use the groups we coach to also model. So I did a session yesterday on footwork, and I had an activity which generated good footwork. It was, I don't know if you're doing mirroring or jockeying, you may have heard that. So it's like a, you know, I'm the player, you're the mirror. Wherever I go, you've got to follow. I run forwards at you, you've got to run backwards. And then what you get, you generate that activity, which is my input, generates the movements you want. I didn't have to teach the movements because they happened kind of, dare I say, naturally. Okay, so I think if we can't physically do it, how can we do it? Well, okay, we can do walkthroughs. We can model. We can use analysis, video analysis. But I think also we have to just remember that if we are unable to do the visual, the audio, and then the enacting, those three things, what did it look like? What are the key words? And when can I do it? So if the doing bit is something we are not able to do as a coach for whatever reasons or competence, then we've really got to turn the volume up on the picture we want to draw for the players and the key words we use. So, you know, we're not able as coaches to do everything. But if we understand how we learn, we are trying to draw a picture that's in my head that's going to be the same picture in your head.
Mm. Does it need to be?
It doesn't need to be in terms of decision-making, because I don't want you to make the decisions that I'm telling you to make. I want you to make those decisions. But I've just done a session on teaching games for understanding this morning. So I give them the rules, I give them the and then I give them a problem and they solve it. So as long as they've got the boundaries, if you like, the rules of the game, the time, the space, the rules, the point scoring system, then my intention, this is the thing I speak a lot now about, lead with intention, not with structure. Okay. Doesn't mean you don't in your mind go direction of travel, I'm going to go here.
Mm.
But if you're very fixed on this, then this, then this, your plan often doesn't allow you to go that, because the variance in their competences, abilities, and pace of learning may not match your structure. So my intention is this morning, I wanted my students to understand, and as you said about lazy coaching, I didn't do any coaching this morning. I didn't do any. I just set up a game and they had to solve the problem. And the purpose of this morning was to get them to understand designing a game where they understand about decision-making and problem-solving.
Mm. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because within that, you know, there's two ways to kind of look at this. One way is people suggest that you're just letting the game be the teacher, so to speak, which I'm not really sure whether you can do that unless you have an understanding of the content you're going after, right? So you're designing games and, like, it's putting in rules and constraints that might actually encourage certain outcomes, not guarantee them, but encourage the focus of the athlete in this case to explore around this space. And I'm completely with you on the idea that, you know, I often say to coach, let's forget about the how and just focus on the what. If we can be better at setting objectives for players to achieve and then exploring with them what the path might be to get success within that, we might be better at developing more effective decision makers and skillful players in return. And I guess, you know, you know, what are your thoughts on that in the first instance? But do you think there's almost an over-reliance now for many coaches to go down that path, with, maybe without having a strong enough understanding of the content that goes behind it?
You've highlighted something that I had found, was that we learn through games. Okay. So when we learn through games, we can't just play the game. The game has to have a purpose. So the game is designed to find space, to put pressure on the defense. So we can learn through a game, providing that the lens we look at that game through is very purposeful. Because we know that kids want to play games. But, you know, if me and you turned up into the park now with our mates and the ball, we wouldn't start with drills or, you know, skill sessions. I mean, the basketball team here, when they train on Monday night, they just shoot. They shoot. Their warm-up is shooting, okay, because that's what they want to do. Now that we want to play a game, but I know that's going to engage you, but it's got to have some purpose. So if I did a game this morning, I'm going to say, right, okay, the purpose of this game is to look at support. Okay, and then we can freeze frame, stop players in the moment, blow the whistle, right? Stop, don't move. Where are you? Where do you think you could apply support? If it's on pressure, why are they really exerting pressure? Tell them what's because they're close, because they've closed down space. So the intention of the game is critical. Otherwise, it kind of just is a game for a game. And you just said, you know, of course we learn through games, and we learn not always with a coach, but the coach gives us direction, and it can give us those fine tuning of what it is we're really trying to achieve.
It's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure if we do learn through games, or whether it's the reflective element pre, post, and during, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That allows the learning to take place. I think there can be, obviously, you know, reflection can take place on its own within the context of the game itself. But I think I'm still of the mind that coaches must be the facilitator of that learning, and the facilitator for that reflective piece around it. And I don't think, as a population of coaches, we're necessarily effective enough in clarification of understanding on what the players and athletes do take away from the sessions. I think it's just that I think we make too many assumptions on what we hope they've taken away, and, you know, equate that to what they have taken away. And almost sometimes it goes back, you know, go back to the coach development piece and being in that frame or being in the picture but not be able to see it is almost, I think a lot of coaches in that, in many respects, maybe lack the accountability to recognize, okay, look, Richard's in my session today. Richard hasn't necessarily taken away what I wanted him to, but it's probably down to Richard, and I don't look at myself enough.
Yeah. I mean, that's that, again, that accountability piece is absolutely, because, you know, there can be a tendency to say, oh, they didn't understand. Whereas I'd like to think that more, how could I have reframed that better or redesigned that so they were able to understand it? Because we know, I mean, certainly when it comes to technology with me, I'll never learn from an online tutorial. Okay, I need somebody to sit next to me to show me what happens. Now, I'm in the same team as you. I learn differently from you. Don't ask me the same questions somebody else. Or if you do, don't expect the same answer. If I don't understand, did I reframe it in many different ways to make people receptive to it? Okay, so the accountability is, have I done the best I can to optimize learning? Okay. And that means not progressing when we really haven't all picked up that, because that leaves people behind. Have we gone too slowly not to stretch people? Because people are not stretched. It's very evident in the session. Their body language does indicate that. So I think, you know, I agree with you 100% that the role of the coach is not an overbearing, pointing, shouting, directing, which I know coaches, you know, not saying coaches do that, but don't think that as a coach you have to be the entire conductor of the orchestra, okay? You know, you want it, that's your end role, to everybody be playing the music that you want, you know. But in that piece is to sometimes just soft touch rather than go in.
It's interesting. I guess, you know, the question that's come back in my mind is, well, surely, you know, in order to do that effectively and within, you know, with the correct intentions, if you like, probably do need a strong base of knowledge around the context of the game itself. And I think this is probably where, especially in football, I'm not sure what your experience has been like in other sports, but there probably isn't enough of a strong foundation of knowledge before they can start asking the right questions or setting the right tasks or practices for the players to engage in. And I guess ultimately, you know, that piece around the stretch, I've got a principle that I follow, and which is essentially, if we're looking to engage, then we must make it relevant, not in our eyes, but the participants. So if they don't see the relevance of it, then they won't participate in it effectively. And in essence, that relevance drives engagement. And it's not about them having to necessarily agree with the practice or the information or whatever it is, but it's them being able to see the place that information, practice or drill or game, whatever it is, has for them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I did a session last week. Context is king. If there's no context, then it's irrelevant. You know, I did it years ago. I did my studies. I did some studies with kids in schools about fitness and PE lessons, and it was not a critical criticism of it. It was just an observational experience that they reflected upon. And one thing they said to me is, you know, that bleep test. I said, oh, the bleep test. We don't like that. We don't see why we need to do it. So, of course, they drop out at level 3 or level 5. And it's only the ones who really wanted to strive, you know, the runners or the pleading players. So the purpose that – I'm not damning bleep tests, by the way. It's just an example, you know, that people couldn't see how it related to them. Well, how is that going to help me, you know, in life or in my sport? And I think the critical thing is that if we – give meaning to learning, that's the critical bit. And you know, the key thing is to constantly refer to what your intention is and then think about that place of learning in the game. So I watched Man City against Liverpool. You know, I'm a Sheffield United supporter, so I can only dream of my team playing like that. I think it was a drone view of City's goal. Now, I may have got this wrong, but it was in a recent match, I think, when they beat Liverpool. And City were pressed in the corner of their own half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their breakout from there to score at the other end, tactically, I know nothing about football. Their movement is phenomenal. Their agility, balance, they're being lent on. They passed under us. They were pressured in terms of space. Then they had some... the multidimensional of movements, all those things there made me think, okay, look, I'm not tactically competent to teach that piece there. I know that the importance of movement. And so if we do a movement-based warm-up that is around a 5-meter grid where we challenge it, we do mirroring, we run backwards, forwards, sideways, we come down, roll, come back up again, I'm mirroring the movements in the game in a warm-up. There's real attachment to my warm-up. Mm. My warm-up has got elements in it that relate to the main part of my session that relates to the game. It's like a story.
No, 100%. It just reminds me of an experience previously when I was working in an academy. And at the time, I was working with a group of goalkeepers. I was goalkeeping coach at the time for the club. And I remember sitting down with the S&C coach and the physio, and we had a goalkeeper that was coming back from injury or something like that. And the conversation we was having was like, you know, from a S&C standpoint, there were certain things that they wanted the goalkeeper to be doing. And I would just spend time observing and studying what was going on and just looking at the movements. And again, to your point, you know, trying to understand where this fits in. Mm-hmm. And what we came to establish in the end, it was, well, it didn't fit in. It just didn't fit in, because these, whereas once I tried to, you know, once I I better understood what it was they were trying to get out from, you know, whatever movement patterns they were working through or whatever exercise they were doing. We then came up with a plan to say, okay, well, if that's what you're going after, well, this is what these are the types of movements we're expecting the goalkeeper to make. And at any given point, how do we bridge that gap so that it becomes more functional in that respect? Mm-hmm. Right. And it was amazing to see, like, you know, I always think about this, you know, especially in football now, in academy football, people talk all the time about multiple disciplinary teams, having everyone from different disciplines together, create this holistic approach. And in essence, we've all got the same goal, but it's very disjointed. There's just loads of different parts which are happening, but they're not happening together, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's that connection piece is almost missing, to the point where actually we can both get what we need here. Yeah. And I think that bit's one aspect of it. And I guess the other part of it, I guess it comes back to the coach themselves in understanding that actually there's many ways to skin that cat. And it doesn't have to be done in a specific way, as long as we're moving in the direction of our intended outcome, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you've absolutely nailed that piece, which I, you know, no one owns the space.
Mm.
Yeah, so no one comes in and says, right, this is, I own this, and not listen to others. So we used to have an athletics trackers right next to the club I coached and played at. So we'd get somebody from the athletics club to teach us about sprinting. But of course, we just use elements of the sprinting, not all of it, because rugby players don't tend to run 100 metres in a straight line, mostly because they go out of touch, and B, because they never get the ball for that open run anyway. So you think, well, what can we learn from athletics that will help us in rugby? Not let's take all of athletics, 100 metre sprinting, and put it in rugby, because it doesn't work. So which is when you know, exactly what you talk about owning that space, you know, we'll have some of your knowledge, but it's going to blend into the overall picture, contribute to the learning. So it's like, what can we learn from other sports? You know, I think if you look at some of the great footwork that's involved in things like netball and basketball, for example, we're playing a game with our feet, not with our hands. But obviously, if you look at some of those netball players and those basketball players, their evasion skills, their footwork, their support running is unbelievable. You know, so surely we could get something from that and kind of take it and then put it into the context of where we want to learn.
Mm.
Rather than we're going to do it like this, we're going
to
do it like that.
So just on that then, obviously, you know, you mentioned that you've got experience working in different sports. Do you see any, or have you experienced that some sports are maybe more progressive in that sense than others, and not just from a, you know, from a perspective of transferable skills, but also from a coach development standpoint?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't necessarily say it's always a governing body compared to other governing bodies. I'd definitely say it's club by club, coach by coach. You know, some of the innovative work in some of the rugby teams I've seen has been fantastic. I remember John Fletcher, he was an England 18s coach, worked at Newcastle Falcons.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
You know, he was a real advocate of basketball, not in terms of a particular team or a particular coach or a particular governing body, but he looked at what can we learn from basketball to help us. Now, I have found some sports more innovative and more forward-thinking in their coaching, but I think it's also down to some of the clubs and the coaches. And we talk about we want players to express themselves, but surely we want coaches to express themselves as well. We want kind of like a maverick, you know, who has an idea that's, oh, let's go. That's a really good idea, you know, because we also want coaches to feel they can put their personal imprint on it. And that is sometimes club by club, and the culture which allows people to be really, really forward thinking.
Mm.
I wouldn't necessarily say it was a particular sport. I would say it's sometimes clubs and coaches within particular sports.
So just on that then, I guess, what are some of the common characteristics you see in the coaches that have been really effective, or the common characteristics which allow coach development with such coaches to flourish even more, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I think they have a very strong bond with the players. The players trust them that when they're doing something, there's a reason behind it. So I did a session last week and I didn't tell them the why we did it. And then they had to present about the last 2 days of learning. And then they started with a why. But one group finished with a why. It's interesting because they went through what they did and they said, now we understand why you did it. And I think that ability to trust a coach that they will, that the players, because we know that engagement with players is critical, isn't it?
Mm.
That kind of buy-in, if you like, that spark that says, if I'm going to try something new, you're on board with it. Okay, so it might sound a bit different, but let's go for it. So it's about the players and the coach trusting, or certainly players trusting the coach, that there's some rationale behind what they're doing. Someone who oversees the whole program and says, look, your super strength is you just come up with some ideas. You have some autonomy. I trust you that what you're doing has got real benefit. Okay. Not that overbearing person who's questioning everything and, oh, we don't do it that way here. Because the real changes are made by people who go to the edge, who take things differently, and not necessarily radically differently, but just try and get the same outcome in a different way.
Mm. It's quite interesting because as you were speaking, I'm just thinking to myself, like, it reminded me of a couple of different things I probably still do now in practice, but probably don't talk about as much as I used to. Mm. And it's, you know, the first piece is, and I always say to the coach, like, you need to see everything that we do, whether it's a coach or coach developer to a coach or coach to player, I think we need to start by selling it. We need to sell what we're doing. We need to sell it, right? And it's almost, the more you sell, the more credit you build, right? Because, and eventually what happens is you might have certain moments where actually we don't have the time to sell this. It just needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And because you've sold it so well in the past and they've bought it so often, not in a negative way, but they will buy without asking questions now. Because they you know, it go in, and it just relies on the credibility of what you've done with them. And I guess it kind of then ties into some of, you know, some different elements of leadership, if you like. But so there's that piece. But then it's almost, it's interesting hearing you say that, you know, they had one group which started with the why and one that ended with the why. And I could imagine, you know, sitting in front of that group, if they were to present to me, the ones that are finished with the why, the whole time they're talking or presenting, I'm just going to be thinking, but why? Like, I can literally feel myself like, yeah, but why? Okay, right. Well, you could have said that at the beginning. Because if you told me that from the beginning, I probably would have been hooked. I think the interesting part and the important part of that is that both as a coach and a coach developer, like, it's, we don't have to agree. We just have to be able to accept. And as a coach developer, I often say to coaches, like, you know, especially when I'm deliberate, if it's a course, as an example, like the goal of this course and the goal of my goal of this course is not to help you become another version of me. That is not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is that we can get to a point of discussion where we can both have a different way of doing it that we can both agree on that, or not so we can both accept. Because there's going to be things that, you know, as a, you know, like yourself, and you know, with years of experience and, you know, different insights that you've picked up, and vice versa with myself, there's just going to be things that we do the way that we do because of what we've been through.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And I always say to coach, the goal is never for you to convince me either. Don't try and convince me to change or try and change my mind. Because I think what I think because of what I've been through, the idea is, can you get me to a point where I can say, okay, do you know what? Fair enough, Rich, I get it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it that way. Or I could, I really like what you've done there, but I might do it slightly differently, but I can see where you're going with it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you mentioned your reflections on the why, is the group who ended with a why were skeptical at the beginning. That's what they said. Well, we started with this, and then now we understand what you're trying to achieve. Now we understand it. They were late to the party, but which is fine. But what we need to remember is that in my mind, I wasn't going to change my belief system to around the purpose of what I was doing. Of course, I might refine activities, I listen to feedback and everything else. But my whole philosophy in these 3 days was around, it was around performance and the multidimensional aspects of performance, measurables and non-measurables. Mm-hmm. And we did it in lots of different ways. And I knew where I was going all the time. Okay, I had real faith in that. And it was about accepting that. And day one, everybody may not come with you initially. That's natural. But over time, the law of diffusion means that the early birds who kind of bite and take on board, then gradually people move towards them, and then you kind of get buy-in. You're going to meet skeptics, obviously, if you do something different. But as long as you have a real rationale behind what you do, I don't want 20 students like me. And the opposite, I want 20 people who think freely. And they say to me in the first year when they come here, is it okay? And they've come from a very linear education department where I'm not, just an observation from, is that they've never been given that ability to go and try something, because we was taught to pass exams in some instances. Mm-hmm. And they say, is it okay? And I said, look, I'm giving you permission. As long as it's safe, as long as it's purposeful, you go for it.
Mm.
And then that kind of ability to say that they then trust me, that I've got faith in what they're doing. Mm. I don't want them to be like me. And sometimes, you know, if the coaches who are listening to this are grassroots coaches, really trying to inspire kids to love of the game, which is we talk about a lot, love of our sports that we are advocates of. Sometimes at early stages, the simple selling, as you mentioned, can be, I can't wait to come back next week.
So, yeah, no, I guess the part within that is obviously giving the coaches the ownership to kind of be who they want to be, and I guess portray the role of the coach, how they best see fit. And I think there is a beauty in what you said around understanding that certain coaches, their role will be to help the participants just want to come back, or just enjoy and love the sport that they're playing, right? And I guess the other side of it is coaches being able to accept and also appreciate that's not everyone's role.
Mm.
We can all have different roles as coaches, and it doesn't have to be all to serve the same purpose. Obviously, beyond supporting the development of the individuals that we're working with, if that's the collective purpose, if, you know, regardless of the function you're playing, it doesn't have to be the same role beneath that. So like your how you go about it and what you're going to do will be different based on the age and stage of the players, and also the environment and the context that the players are participating in, right? So, you know, what we're doing in an after-school club is going to be very different to what we're doing in an academy environment.
Yeah.
There will be some crossovers, of course, but ultimately the end goal is to support and develop the player and leave them in a better position than they were when they came in, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. And that diversity of aspiration is something we need to be aware of. You know, like some kids, just some adults, just want the social, physical activity aspect of playing football. That their dream, whether they dream, doesn't matter. They're playing with their friends, and that's what's critical. That keeps them attached to the game, that keeps them attached to their friends. And of course, the other element is the ones who are really striving to make it their career, their profession in the academies, you know. So coaches will have that bandwidth of aspirations And some will operate across it, some will only operate on part of it. And it's being sensitive to that, and then coach accordingly. You know, demands of the recreational player turning up are different from the demands of somebody who really wants to become the best they can be, you know. But I think at the heart of both, in fact, I don't think I know from experience, at the heart of it is that integral to the whole aspect is if we provide the right environment, that's the foundation for learning.
Mm.
We don't learn in stressful situations. We don't learn under stress. We learn much more when there's no threat attached to it, you know, consequence. Mm. Much more open to being given that challenge. And it doesn't mean that we create an environment that doesn't give us feedback that is about us getting better. It just means around just be sensitive to who's in front of us, what they need at the time and going forwards.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I guess it's just got me thinking about some conversations I had in the past. And I think one of the challenges within that, I guess, the definitions or the job description I've attached to coaches sometimes is actually your role is to almost present the players opportunities they haven't yet considered. In some capacity, I'm looking at that recreational player who's come in and not in a negative way, but they believe that's what they're there for. Actually, can you see the potential in how you can support that individual to go beyond that and expose them to another level or another option, if you like?
Yeah.
And I think if we can kind of constantly be looking at, right, what's just above their head, you know, their reach, and then exposing them to the possibilities that they could actually reach it, then I think we might be doing a really good job in terms of just building the players in and providing the platform to not be stretched, but just be challenged, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess within that, there's also the piece around, again, it got me thinking about another phrase I often use with coaches, and it's like, if you really want to take charge of this situation, if you really want to help players or athletes, then be willing to accept that even when it's not your fault, it's your fault. Meaning there's always something you could have done.
Mm.
Now, is it fair? Not necessarily, but we're not after fairness, we're after development. And if we can get to a point of recognizing, and I probably didn't realize this until like a few years into the process, but I used to actually ask myself, you know, what can I take account of it? Like almost what can I claim as mine? Like everything possible, what can I claim as mine? And I realized that there was a period of time where I used to do that intentionally. And when I did it, and I look back at that period of time, and I often refer to it as like the period where I feel like I had the most accelerated growth as a coach, because I literally just took everything in my stride and said, I could have done something about that. I could have done something about that. And brainstorm and explore, right, what could I have done? Because if it were, you know, even again, came up with that phrase eventually, where it was even, you know, that's not my fault, but I'm going to take it as if it was. And just adopting that mindset, right? Because I think that's where learning takes place.
Yeah, and also, you know, to say it's your fault is also to take your credit. And I think that when we embark on this, remember, this is a partnership.
Mm.
You know, it's not all on me. You know, whatever sport you're coaching, whatever you're teaching, it's not all on me. I can provide the environment, the knowledge, the experience, the support, the guidance, the feedback, but I can't do it for you. So this is where it becomes a partnership. And this is why I sometimes say, you know, how shall we learn? You know, and I'm thinking, well, okay, how can I get the best out of you? Needs us to ask that question. It doesn't mean we're going to give them sunshine and unicorns or chocolate cake all the time, because that's not how we're fed. That's not how we're going to get better. It's going to have, you know, all the courses of the meal. But it's still about asking that question, because if you want people to flourish, don't make an assumption that they're going to flourish under my conditions, because they may flourish in the different conditions.
Mm.
You know, I remember I spent weeks with the Royal Navy rugby team. I remember 8 years ago, I worked with them just in the build-up to the Army-Navy game. And it was on the day of the match when we were looking at a morning activity to bring the guys together, give them a buzz. And I put this activity, and this guy said, I love these things. And I thought, I didn't know that. I've just spent 12 weeks working with you, and now you've come alive. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, what a missed opportunity.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting. Sorry, cut you going.
No, it was just that I'm never going to get it right. But if I'm open to knowing I'm not going to get it right and open to learning and humility to accept I want to get better, I think that's critical. But also, I would counteract with the fact that it took 1976 Olympics for the first person to get perfect 10 in gymnastics. Okay, so, you know, those perfect 10s are like very, very rare.
But there's so many kind of underlying messages in that, right? And the first one is that, you know, or yeah, just questions to think about. As coaches, how often do we actually do the work in understanding what works best for our players? Not because it's what they say, because it's actually what it is. And what I mean by that is, it gets me thinking about this, you know, number of times where sometimes as participants, whether as coaches and of course players in an environment, we sometimes exclude ourselves from the learning opportunity, i.e. I still do it myself. I try and catch myself when I'm in it, but things like, oh, well, I need to see it first, or I can't learn in this way, or I don't learn in that way, or I don't like when people ask me questions. Actually, is that really the case? Or is it just, it's not the methodology, but it's the approach that was used in the delivery of it, if that makes sense, that had the negative impact. And sometimes to challenge that perception, right? Because it might not be a question that put you off. It actually might have been the question that put you off.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for coaches to maybe do a little bit more work. And I mentioned earlier, I've just started my doctoral studies around coach development, coach education. And one of the I guess, things I'm looking into at the moment, and is just, how much work do we actually do prepping for learning? How much work do we do before the interactions take place and understanding what the interaction maybe should or could look like? So kind of similar to your question, really, like, how should we learn? But then also that can not only guide the processes, or necessarily not guide the process, but just give insight on what the process might look like. However, equally, it also gives us a recognition and understanding maybe of what coaches value in their learning processes, right? Yeah. And it's a question I'm wrestling with at the moment. You know, come back to the one I asked you earlier, like, well, what does work in coach development? What is proven to be working? What does work based on not necessarily studies, but experience, but also recognition for, is it right that, I guess, coach developers, educators, whatever they want to call us in any way, shape or form, is it right that we're the one to drive the content? Because I think one of the challenges in hooking coaches in for coach development is one, and often in many cases, ones that are go away with learning taking place, you're in some sense preaching to the choir because they're here for that knowledge and that information. Mm-hmm. But then you've got the other side of that, where you've got coaches who are engaging in content or engaging in workshops or delivery, but it's just a means to an end. And I'm fascinated by the idea of, how do we get those coaches hooked in from minute one?
Yeah, that's that culture of self-improvement, that culture of learning is difficult to instill. You know, we are now more able to access learning. I was looking at some to search for something on Google around just game design for one particular aspect. And of course, that was my go-to, if you like. But we are now more, you know, there's no way can you not access, particularly with AI, I suppose, sessions, content, podcasts, videos. You know,
it's almost too much, right?
It is too much, but you know, don't think you can consume all of it. You don't need to all of it. It's not like in the supermarket. You're not going to eat everything on the shelves. Just go there and say, you know what, that one thing I picked up from that, and this is what I found, a session I did a couple of weeks ago, which wasn't a session I'd planned, but it was a session that was needed, was we reversed this session. We normally do like a session around BMX, teaching BMX after I've done a session on learning, and we flipped it. We did the BMX, and then we did reflective practice. And the fact that we had something tangible to look back on meant the session was so much better because it was much more relatable. And one of the things that I think is a skill and a need is that, do we reflect often enough? Do we reflect in the moment? So you mentioned about going into a session about content. Well, sometimes I've done sessions and friends of mine said to me, you changed that, didn't you? And I said, only you would have known I changed that, because my plan wasn't going to plan. So, you know, the ability to reflect with others, okay, so use the people we are the recipients of our coaching. There are reflections. reflect with that mentoring aspect, and also the ability for us to look at ourselves and said, okay, was I a good teacher today? You know, I say that to myself in other days. And I say, sometimes I say, I was a good teacher today. You know, and more often than not, I say, I could have been better. I do that. But I've also got to realize that sometimes I couldn't have done any more in that session.
But I think also, I think it's good that you can give yourself credit in that way. And I think it's really, really important for coaches to do that, not just for their own motivation and confidence as well, but also, you know, recognition that actually, you know, there's only so much you can control, right? And I think the other part of that is actually something that I've become a lot more accustomed to, probably more intentionally within the last couple of years, is following up with that clarification. And again, I've become really fascinated by questions. And an element is linked to feedback, but also just like checking for understanding and impact. Now, you know, we can't truly measure impact, but we can go closer to understanding what has had an impact and maybe in what ways. So, you know, coming back to your question, have I been a good coach? And I'll say to myself, yeah, I think so, but I'll always look for a reason why to substantiate it. And then, I, you know, even if I'm interacting with coaches, and I think the common questions that I've started asking coaches now, just to kind of get a bit of an insight, not just what they've taken away, but how my delivery and what specifically within my delivery has had an impact. It's what was most useful for them. In what ways did they find that message to become useful for them? And how do they then intend on using that information?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, I'm a good coach today. I've always based it upon something. You know, it's never spurious. It's actually, there's enough feedback, either verbal or behavioural, that tells me, I think they really enjoyed that. I did a good session. Of course, you could have refined it. But the other thing, you're absolutely right, is about impact. And this is where we're doing about performance last week. The impact sometimes is measurable. Number of passes in the game, be plenty of games where we look at decisions and we can count those. And they're non-measurables. Non-measurables are just a feel, you know, and the impact sometimes is we have to be patient with that impact, because learning is like me passing my driving test. You know, it took me four attempts, you know, same lessons as everybody else. I came to party a little bit later than everybody else, but my scars are now healed. But, you know, the impact is be receptive to those things when people come back to you 2 years down the line and say, thank you for that coaching. I was only with your team for 6 weeks, but I was just, I don't know, but you made a real difference. And it's not, I'm just doing a project at the moment and it, you know, we're looking at the highlights. And I said, the highlights can't be results based only. And the people I've interviewed have spoken about impact has been interactions with others in the team that are lifelong. So, you know, we are that facilitator, for a better word. So our legacy is maybe our friendships and lifelong relationships that we have generated through an environment we created, a team we built, those comments we made, not the wins and losses. Of course, we aspire to win more than we lose. And then the skill level about impact, we know in terms of skill acquisition and learning, it's not a linear process, but can we say we have given the people the opportunity to maximize that learning. So small sided games, for example, are a classic example of, and I did some work a long time ago, and it was around small sided games. The number of touches and decisions in a 3v3 compared to an 11v11 in the same time went from 85 down to 5. Now, it doesn't mean say we don't play 11v11, but it means that I'm optimizing our exposure to that skill learning by small-sided games. That was my intention.
And I think, again, the key word there is intention. And if you base it on the intention, then, you know, you can accept that as long as the intention was right, the process might be flawed. It might not necessarily be flawless, right?
Yeah,
and I think it's that it allows you that opportunity to reflect and kind of understand, right? Are we still on the right track? If that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, if we, like I said, this one about linear. You know, when we start, we may have a period of growth when we really are, it's catching fire, and then we're going to hit a roadblock, and then we hit a bump in the road. But that's learning. That is life. That's the non-linear nature of what we do. As long as we are receptive to it, and just the momentum we had, we prepared to come back and go, okay, well, look, maybe we need to just slow down, reframe, represent the information differently. And I think that's the nature of the agility that I talk about in coaches. That's why I kind of go against some structure, if you like, and think if we're tied to structure, we're not always agile to move where the session needs it to go. Because sessions can be on mood and weather.
You know? I mean, 100%. And it got me thinking, as you were saying earlier, you know, you had your colleague this, you identified, you know, only that person would have known that that hasn't gone to plan. But it has, though, hasn't it? Because you still align the intentions.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of it, right? Within coaching, the adaptability piece, and even in coach development, being adaptable to identify, right, what are we going after here? Let's not be wedded. And I often use the phrase, let's not be wedded to our plans. Let's be wedded to the outcome.
Yeah, that should be almost on the coach's notice board, because that's it. I love that. That's great. Yeah, wedded to our intentions, because that's long lasting, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, well, this is it.
In theory, you know.
And I think that's the only thing that we can, if you like, maintain control over, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's a beauty in that as well. So I guess, you know, my question to you, Rich, and I'm going to bring it back to the earlier question. So what works in coach development then?
What works in coach development is awareness. I go back to the multidimensional nature of things. There's so many dimensions in there. There's an emotional connection. There's the theoretical aspects, you know, skill acquisition, how we learn, feedback. What works in coach development is to ensure that what you're providing is what the person who you're developing needs at that time.
And who those needs, who are they identified by? Because this is often a contentious point, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I sometimes think it's, I mean, it's a good question, because sometimes the people don't know what they need until you highlight it, you know. Sometimes people come to you and say, I got real problems with the kids, you know, they're everywhere and I can't control them. And otherwise things say, I've got such a range of abilities, I don't know how to manage that. And then somebody will say something and I say, well, what I've noticed is, and they wouldn't have thought of that because they're so immersed in the technical aspect. They haven't even bothered to connect with the people I coached. You know, this thing last week, I've dropped into a group of third year students, not over here, just when I was away. And I played this game and I knew everybody's name after like 5 minutes. And the teacher room said, I don't know, have you done that? I've only just got to know their names and I've been teaching for 3 years. I thought, wow. You know, like, that's primary. That's a critical thing. And
well, people's names are powerful, right? You get that and you get their attention.
The most important thing is almost like an important gesture, knowing your name. Not because we could forget names over time. We may be in the street and I can't remember your name. But in that moment, the effort I put into making the most basic of connections is to know your name, because that can lift people. You know? And you might say, I was so busy with setting up this and putting the kit out and such and such. Well, look, that can, you can always do that later, or, you know, meet the people. What do they need right now? Do you know what they need? I don't know. Well, it's dark and it's raining and they've had a bad day at school, or they've driven a long way. Maybe they just need to have some time to realize why they like being at your club. Is that welcoming culture? Isn't there nothing nice than getting a high five or a
100%. And it reminds me of a conversation I had with a coach recently. I've been observing a lot of coaches and then reflecting on the sessions with them. And the question I often get asked, so, you know, yes, have you got any feedback? Not really. I just got one thing I want to say. And I just keep the one thing. Yeah, but if you got, you know, it's okay, you can give me more. And I'm very reluctant. And I try, because what my experience has come to be is that if I give you 3 or 4 bits of feedback, you're going to gravitate to the thing that you're most interested by rather than the thing that maybe should be prioritized.
And I've
learned to just don't have anything else to say right now. That's all I've got for you. I mean, it kind of go away, work on this, because coming back to your earlier point, they might have a problem which might not actually be the problem. And I guess what I try and do with you know, through questions, through my knowledge, through my insight, and maybe just past experiences, try and understand, okay, I can see what's happening here. And the problem that you're describing isn't the problem that you're dealing with. That's just how it's manifested itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So it becomes really interesting and quite, and I find it actually to be much more effective and useful in terms of providing feedback for coaches. I'm just going to give you one thing, just one thing, because it's also more manageable in terms of trying to address it, right?
Yeah, of course. If you give people feedback as a list, it can be pretty devastating for some people, you know. I worked with a coach, and my feedback to him, he said, "You coach near a true story near an airport," and I said, "Slip feedback. You don't give your feedback when planes are landing, because they just want to hear it." You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I never thought of that. So we're just at the point, you know, and just, you know, it's a busy airport. But you're right. Don't make one thing to be the thing. It's just one thing, you know, consider it. And you're right. If you give a list, oh God, where do I start? And then what do? We start on the one we like most, like you
exactly.
said.
Exactly.
You
know, exactly that.
Easy,
and,
that is.
And often that one thing that you like the most is often the thing that's least required.
Yeah. Right,
So it's fascinating.
The bits, you know?
Rich, yeah. I'm conscious of time. I want to ask one final question. If you've got any final messages that you think maybe coaches should consider, or a question maybe coaches to think about in terms of their own reflective practice and their engagement within their own development.
Yeah, I think no particular order, but I'd probably say one of the celebrations that I have, and I've been here for teaching here 20 years now at the university, it's a third of my life, is that... And this isn't meant to sound, it's a genuine comment. Never underestimate the impact you have on other people. You know, they may not always tell you 5 minutes after a session. They may tell you 5 years down the line. And the joy I have in this job is that people come back and want to, and I think, well, I must have done something good. So always in the back of your mind, think that you are making a difference that may not tell you then. But years later, months later, weeks later, they will do that. That's the second thing, is I'd probably just be always look to learn. There's something you can learn from even the worst as well as the best sessions. That awareness to get better. We ask players to get better, and they should ask of us to get better as well. You know, that's our responsibility. That's our partnership. And the third thing as well, which is sometimes lost in torching, is the reason why people leave sport and leave coaching, because most coaches, so as we know, are amateur volunteer coaches, is, you know, if it's not joyful for you, it's not going to be joyful for those you coach. So never forget the need to make sure that experience is one that has elements of fun and enjoyment, because whatever level you're at, even if you are at the highest level, you don't remove that element of why we started the game in the first place. So never lose that love of what you're doing for those who also love that what you're doing as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a beautiful way to finish. And it's just almost remind yourself why you started this.
Yeah.
Remind yourself why you started this. And I think just going back to your first point around the impact, and I speak about this all the time, and I truly probably didn't appreciate that when I first started doing this stuff that we call coach development. And then I used to see, like you said, coaches a year or so down the line or whatever, and there would be this common thing that would happen, and I used to think it was quite weird, if I'm being honest, I'm still thinking about what you said. Yes, I'm thinking to myself, why are you thinking about what I've said? But then it after it happened a few times, I really started to dig deep into it, and I think to myself, okay, wow, I'm leaving people with lasting thoughts around what I've said, and I'm not even thinking about what I'm saying. Imagine what I could do if I start thinking about what I'm saying.
What you're saying comes from intuition, feeling that's what you'd say.
Of
course, these people you're saying it to may have never heard that for the first time.
Mm.
Oh, I never thought of it like that, but that's your way.
Yeah.
So you naturally say it, but you've left somebody with this, wow.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And what I've come to find over time, and it's interesting, and I say this to people all the time, when I'm delivering workshops or I'm delivering, I try and I don't like the idea of I'm here delivering content. Mm. I just feel like it's a bit too salesy for me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But what I've come to find, and those moments when people have said, I really still think about that one thing you said, I realized over time that actually my way is, I like having conversations, and often what I'm sharing with you is almost my thought out loud.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually trying to deliver content to you or teach you content necessarily. I'm just thinking about what the topic of this content might be, and my thoughts are just coming out loud. And eventually I got to a point where I realized, oh, actually, there's a common thing here. People often tell me that this is something they hold on to. This, remember, it's made it easy. And my thing is, well, if it makes it easier for you to understand it, if it works for you, go with it. As long as you understand that I'm not trying to sell you something, we're just discussing it. And I think that's the beauty of coach development for me as well, is everything's a point of discussion. There's different ways to skin that cat.
You're stimulating thinking. You're an agitator. You're dropping in something in that creates discussion, creates thought, where Precisely. People may have not thought about before. And the curriculum and the learning outcomes, I don't know, I like the first bit rather than the second bit. Do you know what I mean? Because the first bit is natural. It meets the needs of those in front of you. The second bit is the formal piece, which has a place.
But yeah,
generate thinking. So, which I've done for the last hour and a quarter, which has been really lovely.
No, it's been fascinating. Honestly, you've given me a lot to think about, a lot to think back over in terms of my past experiences. And I hope it's been as insightful for you as it has been for me.
100%. And keep in touch. You know, if our paths cross, it'd be lovely to see you again. And yeah, look, it's been great. I've been really appreciative of this time to talk with you. It's been great. Thank you.
Amazing. Well, let's definitely try and do it again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe when, and maybe we could pass this on to Sheffield United. Maybe they get some wisdom to get them off the bottom of the league, which is my team.
Wisdom from yourself and not me, hopefully. Rich, it's been a real pleasure. I look forward to speaking to you again. Take care.
Likewise. Okay, go well. Bye-bye. Bye.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.